In the police academy, they tell you not to take this stuff personal.
A murder that even the toughest cop can't forget.
You can't go to a crime scene like that and not take it personal.
A murder that tears out a mother's heart.
He said, "Grandma, Mommy's dead."
Serial killers don't just stalk the highways at night. They're watching you on a sunny afternoon at the mall. And when you get in the car, they're waiting.
Get in the car!
Do what I tell you to do, or I'm going to kill your son.
I'm M. William Phelps, investigative journalist, and I have an obsession. Serial killer, cold cases.
Now, nearly 10 years later, investigators say they still need the public's help.
For me, it's personal. My sister-in-law was murdered, and her killer has never been caught. These killers are still out there. Their victims deserve justice. And just one new clue could make all the difference. I don't have a badge, but I do have something the cops don't have. Someone who understands the dark mind of a murderer.
As I started killing again and again, I saw it as a purpose.
Because he is one. It's the Christmas shopping season in Boca Raton, Florida, 2007. 2 weeks till Santa Claus arrives, and 7-year-old Joey Bocchicchio can hardly contain herself. Joey and her mom, Nancy, are at the mall. At 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it's time to go home. But as they return to their car, they walk straight into a killer's deadly trap. Boca Raton. Sun, surf, shopping, retirement. What a place to live. Opulence and wealth. But there's something else here. An evil. A serial killer of the worst kind. Why? Because he not only kills people, he preys on women and children. Nancy and Joey Bocchicchio never made it home from their shopping trip. They were found shot dead in the mall parking lot later that night. And they weren't this predator's first victims. 18 months earlier, 52-year-old mother of two, Randy Gorenberg, went shopping at the same mall. She drove a black SUV, just like Nancy Bocchicchio. Again, it was broad daylight. She was carjacked and shot. Her body dumped in a nearby park. And there was a third attack. A mother and child kidnapped at gunpoint. But in this case, the killer chose to let them go. So I've got a few puzzles to solve. Are these cases connected? Is this a budding serial killer? What kind of monster targets women and children in a shopping mall? And when will he strike again? There'll be no time to get a tan on this trip to the Sunshine State. I'm not walking through a back alley somewhere, or on a lonely stretch of highway, or running through the woods at night. I'm walking through a shopping mall parking lot. It's a normal place. People come here to socialize, meet friends, shop. But you know what it is in this case? It's a hunting ground. But why hunt at the mall? It's crowded, open, sunny. This doesn't fit with our image of a monster trolling for victims in the darkness.
This is a serial's paradise. I mean, you know, if this guy's blending in like a chameleon, he's watching everything.
That's John Kelly, criminal profiler, my colleague. Somehow Kelly manages to make everything scary, even shopping at the mall.
I mean, think about it. It's the perfect stalk, the perfect hunt. All he has to do is sit there and be patient and focus in on his victim of choice.
We don't know who we're parking next to at the mall.
No, you never know.
We don't know who we're walking past at the mall.
Exactly, and you don't know who's watching at the mall either.
When the mall isn't safe anymore, I gotta start wondering, is anywhere safe? Do serial killers really hang out here? Let's ask one, Raven. He's a guy who won't ever be going to the mall again.
Okay, Raven, let me start by asking you, why a shopping mall?
There you go. For a serial killer, a shopping mall is like a Garden of Eden. But why would a killer take the risk of hunting out in the open? Raven's got something there. And it's even more than just believing that nothing bad happens out in the open. I mean, look at these streets. Big, beautiful houses, nice cars. Boca Raton feels comfortable. It feels safe. This isn't Murder City.
Boca's an affluent area. It has a relatively low crime rate. From any way you look at it, this case was abnormal. You know, we don't get a lot of robberies. We don't get a lot of violent crimes. In fact, we have a very low violent crime rate.
Captain Matthew Duggan of the Boca Raton PD has been hunting the mall killer for 5 years now.
We've followed up on nearly 2,000 leads because we're going to follow up on everything. We're not going to let travel, we're not going to let time, or we're not going to let anything hold us back from our goal to solve this case. We're that committed.
And Captain Duggan has a lead for me, the survivor of the third attack. For safety, her identity remains hidden, so we'll call her Jane Doe. I'm convinced that her story will help us build a profile of this killer. I've just got to track her down. I'm in Florida, soaking up a little sunshine. But like most places I go, there's darkness waiting around the next corner.
So here in Boca Raton, you know, you've got the gated communities. You've got these high walls around the properties, security, alarm systems. So what does our serial killer do here? He adapts. He goes out and he attacks when they're most vulnerable and their guard is down. At a shopping mall. Makes sense.
We're all vulnerable. And no one assumes that their life will be torn apart by murder. But it happens. Believe me, it happens.
We get to the house, and I see police cars all around and men standing all around. I said, oh my God, what's going on?
Yeah. Idy Elias remembers the day her grandson ran to her with some terrible news.
And I get out of the car. He comes running towards me. Grandma. Grandma. Mommy's dead. Dead. And I said, what? He said, Mommy. Mommy's dead.
No parent wants to outlive their child. Idy Elias had to experience that horror, burying her daughter, Randy Gorenberg.
She was a considerate, wonderful, helpful, dutiful, loving daughter. You know, when she smiled, it was genuine. All that this girl wanted was to be a good mother. And she was.
It's just after 1 p.m. on March 23rd, 2007. Randy Gorenberg is finishing up her shopping at the Town Center Mall in Boca Raton. As she walks into the parking lot, something goes horribly wrong. Somehow, someone takes control of Randy in her car. Half an hour later, her black SUV pulls up at a park 6 miles away.
There were people in the Civic Center that heard the gunshots. And they ran out. And they saw a body coming out of the door of the SUV. They left her body and they drove away in a rush.
Randy was shot twice in the head, like an execution.
She didn't die of natural causes. She was murdered. She was shot in the head, gangster style. Maybe she was at the wrong place at the wrong time. There's so many thoughts that go through my head. I have spent sleepless days and nights. And I just hope before I die they figure it out. Because I want to know why.
Randy Gorenberg was a loving wife and a devoted mother of two.
To my daughter, Randy, my dear.
While her mother, Idy, waits for answers, she deals with the grief as best she can, writing to her daughter every day.
That power of love. I find myself pining for you more and more and more. You are always so motivated, so inspiring. I miss that quality.
Idy, do you believe that Randy is hearing this?
Yes.
You do?
Yes.
Me too. I believe that.
I can't believe you're not here. My Randy.
The police at the Randy Gorenberg crime scene found that her shoes and purse were missing. But she was still wearing a Cartier watch, plus an expensive diamond ring and necklace. Her black SUV was later found abandoned behind a nearby store. So let's look at the pattern in these cases. We've got two women shopping at the same mall, driving black SUVs, shot to death. What does it all mean?
Let me ask you something. Do you think he chose the mall first, and then he sat and he waited for the perfect victim?
Absolutely. The mall is very important. Affluent mall, affluent vehicle, affluent victim. Money.
And why black SUVs?
Easier to hide in, especially if the windows are tinted.
Right.
Nobody's gonna give it a second look. Slouch down in the back. Who's gonna see him? Again, he's very concerned about not being seen. It's perfect concealment. You look like any other shopper, anybody else that pulls in next to you, they're on their way into the mall, so they're not even giving you a second look.
The black SUVs suggest planning. He's thought this out carefully. The car has to be just right, or he won't attack. And then there's the gun, an unusual weapon for a serial killer.
It's a good question for Raven. He didn't like guns much.
Why shoot them? Why not slit their necks or strangle them?
Strangling takes a long time. You probably have history. He's aware of what it takes to kill. He's probably very versed at it. Explain something. You have footprints going everywhere.
And shooting, it's a little less personal. There's less emotion than a hands-on murder. Could it be that this killer isn't attacking women out of hate or some twisted sex drive? Are they just easy targets for him to overpower? I need more details. And on December 12th, 2007, 10 months after the murder of Randy Gorenberg, there's another killing at the mall.
What are you doing?
This one is full of details. Horrible details. December 2007. It's been another frenetic day of pre-Christmas shopping at the Town Center Mall in Boca Raton, Florida. And as midnight approaches, the guards do their final checks of the parking lot. There's something very odd about a black SUV parked at the back of the lot.
Security guard found the door open. The door was open and the car was running. And when he looked in, he was horrified.
Guys, we got a problem down here. We need some.
But when the police came, two of the detectives and the captain had a daughter exactly the same age as Joey, so they were beside themselves. They never saw anything like that in Boca. It was the worst thing that ever happened, the worst crime.
The worst crime? That doesn't even begin to say it. And there's a reason Joanne Bruno can't find the words to describe this. She's talking about the cold-blooded murder of her younger sister, Nancy Bocchicchio, and Nancy's 7-year-old daughter, Joey.
Police believe they were carjacked. At some point, they were bound with plastic zip ties and shot to death.
They didn't find my sister till 11:30 that night. God only knows how long he had them, or how long they were parked in that parking lot. They found them in the parking lot with the doors open.
At that point at night was the only car there. It was sitting alone in a parking lot, and it just looked so isolated and so lonely.
On the scene that night was Captain Matthew Duggan of the Boca Raton PD.
Sounds dramatic, but sometimes you close your eyes and you see what happened, what that crime scene looked. I look at my kids sometimes. You know, my daughters are the same age as what Joey would have been. You have to personalize a case like this because it's why we do this job.
Joey Bocchicchio, only 7 years old, full of life, just like her mom.
Nancy, she wanted a little girl all her life. That's something she always wanted, was a little girl.
The doctors had told Nancy she'd never have kids. They told her not to go through with Joey's pregnancy. But Nancy had a feeling it would be okay. And Joey came out perfect.
There wasn't a thing wrong with her. She was healthy, beautiful, smart. They were always singing together. You knew she was in the room. There was a presence when Nancy came. And Joey was the same. There was a presence about them.
Nancy and Joey's trip to the mall that day was like any other. The pair were captured on the mall's security cameras.
We see them walking together through the mall. We were able to trace some of their purchases that day. There was nothing out of the ordinary. They got something to eat, did a little bit of shopping.
Just after 3 p.m., Nancy and Joey are seen walking out of the mall towards the parking lot, out of view of the security cameras. So imagine, you come out of the mall, right? You're with your child. You get into the vehicle, you're laughing, you're talking. You put the key in the ignition. You go to start the car, and somebody puts a gun to the back of your head. You turn around, your daughter's strapped in, but there's this guy next to her, and he's holding her hostage. And you're gonna do exactly what he says.
Go, go.
They left the mall at 3:11. Several minutes later, the local sheriff's office gets a 911 phone call from the victim's cell phone.
What are you doing? Do you want to die? Huh?
There's no answer on the line, and it hangs up immediately.
A few minutes after that, a withdrawal is made from a nearby drive-through ATM. $500.
What happened after that is somewhat of a mystery. But what we do know is that we have some eyewitnesses that can place the victim's vehicle back at the mall within an hour of leaving the mall.
And by then, under the bright Florida sun, Nancy and Joey were dead.
They were shot at point-blank range. They were basically executed.
Nancy's abandoned black SUV tells a terrifying story about this crime and this killer.
There was a pair of handcuffs on the mother, and there were also some goggles on her that were blacked out.
And Nancy's neck had been zip-tied to the headrest.
The preparation and the forethought into committing these crimes and deciding to take these bindings with him, it shows me a lot of planning on his part.
This killer had come prepared.
So let's go through this. So carefully planned, so high risk. Was it a thrill kill, or was this guy killing for the money?
It's all about the money.
So what's he doing with that money?
He's taking that money and he's using it to buy his creature comforts, whatever that may be. Drugs, cars, gambling.
So you don't think the money was a cover for just his love of killing?
No way, because he spent too much time at that ATM withdrawing that money. That money was extremely important to him. The only reason that they left that ATM is because she hit her limit, or he would have continued to have that machine spit money out.
I mean, you would kill a woman and her kid, right? For a couple of $100?
Yeah, these people don't think in terms like that. As long as the means justifies the end and they have the cash, that's all they care about. Their gratification, you know that.
And you just pray you never come in contact with one of them.
Absolutely, because the only thing that matters to them is them and their gratification.
But what about those bindings and goggles? So precise, so particular. John Kelly is keen to ask Raven about that.
Raven, can you tell me what the securing was inside the vehicles with the goggles and the straps and everything? Was that ritualistic, or was that part of a criminal's MO?
Well, I mean, I can ask why, and also so other people couldn't see the tear in their eyes when they're going down the road. My first victim, I killed her, and the first thing I did was I set her in the front seat of my car and left her sitting up, leaning against the window, even though she's a bloody mess. But it was late at night. And I drove down the road.
shocking. But that's how serial killers think. Murder is just a matter of fact. Raven doesn't feel the horror that we feel. Just like the mall killer. That's why he can shoot a mother and daughter and simply move on to his next victim. Boca Raton. You got your scooters. You got your walkers. You got your striped sweatpants. You got golfing. Driving around in the heat down here, I've been turning over all the angles in this case, and it keeps coming back to the victim who got away, Jane Doe. What did she see? How did she survive? I put in a few calls since I hit Florida, and I found someone who can tell me about her case. It's her attorney, a guy called Skip Campbell.
She's terrified every single day, total fear. And she's constantly looking over her shoulder. Any place that she goes, she fears that this fellow might show up and do something harmful to her or her son.
Jane Doe's day of horror began the same way Randy Gornberg's did. The same way Nancy and Joey Bocchicchio's began. A trip to the town center mall, a little shopping, then back to her car, which is a black SUV.
Mama, mama!
What's wrong?
Get in the car. Get in the car!
She gets back in the car, and he's there in the back seat. He has the gun, and he says, "You gotta do what I tell you to do, or I'm gonna kill your son."
Get in the car.
Jane's son is only 2 years old.
He tells her to drive to an ATM machine, which is located about a block away from the shopping mall, and tells her to withdraw money. And she starts withdrawing money.
At $600, she reaches her limit for the day. So he tells her to drive on. All the while, she is fighting a desperate battle to save her son's life. No one expects this kind of attack in broad daylight. No one believes that will happen.
You're parked here. You're caught totally off guard. The attack is unexpected because you go to a mall to shop, not to be abducted. Is that why this guy chooses malls?
And hunting for victims in their cars tells me something else.
Well, it tells me that he can easily confine his victim or victims. He can easily gain control over them, and that's his game here. His game is to gain control as fast as he can, get those doors closed, and get out of here.
There's another factor in play here. A child in the car in two of these attacks. Why target a mother and child?
The child's perfect leverage. Maybe the woman won't follow his orders and do what he says, but if he's got a gun on her child, she's going to do whatever he wants, and she's going to follow his orders. He'll have complete control of her. So when he's in his stalking pattern, he's focusing on a mother coming out with a child, and especially if it's a black SUV, then he's on the move. He's going to move quickly.
So what you're telling me is, as I think about it, you have the wife with the child shopping, and her man is at work. And our guy likely knows this, right?
He feels he's not gonna run into resistance. It's gonna be an easier target all the way around. Mother, child.
No husband.
No husband. Take advantage. Use the child as leverage. so do what you want.
It's August 2007. People are going about their daily lives in Boca Raton, Florida. Driving to lunch, heading to the mall, going to the gym.
Please, just don't hurt my boy, okay? Please.
Do as I say.
They have no idea they've just driven past a young woman fighting for her life and the life of her son.
Hey.
At that point in time, she's thinking, this is it. And she felt that she and her son were going to get killed at that point in time.
A carjacker has just forced Jane Doe to pull into a quiet parking lot behind a local restaurant. She thinks he's about to kill her.
Get out of the car.
Okay.
But he's only beginning to turn up the terror.
He gets her in the back seat, puts a zip tie around her neck, puts on some sunglasses that have tape over it, and binds her arms.
His name's James.
Shut up.
The zip tie was around the neck and around the headrest in the car.
He takes over the driving. They move on. And Jane Doe's do-or-die struggle for her son's life resumes.
What are you doing now?
She's talking to him to calm him down.
What is she saying?
Things like, don't hurt my son.
He's just such a little boy. He's done nothing to you.
And he actually said something nice about, you have a good boy here. So she was talking mostly about her son and trying to make him realize that these were human beings.
Human beings. Sitting in that SUV, calmly talking to that killer. Boy, Jane Doe, she sat on the cusp of life and death. If you can get a serial killer to remember that you're a fellow human, a person with loved ones, with family.
His name is James. Look at him. He's just sleeping.
Maybe that gives you a chance. Because most of the time, these serial killers, they don't see human beings. They see targets, things to use. To kill, to discard, just like trash.
After an hour or so, they return to where this ordeal began, the parking lot at the mall.
During this period of time, and he actually changes the sunglasses to kind of like swimming goggles with tape over it.
Jane Doe wonders again, is this the end? And in a way, it is. Because he decides to let her go.
He tells her, call your husband, tell him to come pick you up because your car broke down. And it's at that point in time also, he says, if I see my description anywhere, you're in trouble because I know who you are.
When the cops come, I want you to tell them I'm short, fat, and black.
And that's when he told her to give a description which was not the description of what he actually looked like.
I promise.
With that, he leaves her. Jane Doe doesn't listen to his instructions. She gives police a solid description.
He was wearing a floppy hat, had sunglasses on, was Caucasian, possibly Hispanic, had curly brown hair, and he had a ponytail, which was about 6 inches long.
Jane Doe survived something almost no one does. She was in a serial killer's clutches. He was poised to kill, and he changed his mind. Why? makes me wonder, did Raven ever get that close and change his mind?
No, I did not. No, there's no way. I would tell my victim while I was killing them that if I was a murderer and I had gotten away with this before, I just gave them enough information to prosecute me at a later time. So that kept me online to kill them.
So was there ever any sympathy for his victims? So close to death. But something in her kidnapper's makeup helped her change his mind.
By talking to this guy and humanizing him, she saved her life and her son's life, didn't she, Kelly?
She was able to establish rapport with this guy. He really wanted to trust her. I mean, this is deep inside of him. He has not been able to trust various people, and probably mostly women, throughout his life.
Right.
But there's always been this need or want or hope that at some point he could trust a woman.
Interesting.
But what happens is she turns around, gets with the cops, gets with the sketch artist, and does a sketch on him, and he sees himself on TV that night. He's been betrayed. He's been betrayed. That's not gonna happen again. He's not trusting again.
I'm in Boca Raton, Florida. In 2007, this town was terrorized by a killer who struck right where we shopped, at the mall.
He is a serial killer, in my opinion, who probably has a drug habit. He is somebody that probably will do this again, given the right opportunity. He has to be caught. He has to be stopped.
On the surface, the murders look very similar. Two women driving black SUVs are carjacked from the same shopping mall parking lot and shot, one with her 7-year-old daughter.
What's wrong?
Get in the car. Get in the car!
A third woman is carjacked with her 2-year-old son.
Go to a drive-thru ATM.
She's robbed and let go. But some of the fine details in these attacks just don't add up. The killer used zip ties, handcuffs, and darkened goggles in two of the attacks. But nothing like that was found with the first victim, Randy Gornberg.
Shut up! Oh.
And unlike the others, she wasn't brought back to the mall parking lot. Her murder feels different.
Randy Gornberg was abducted just in the next town over from here, close by. But yet her body is dumped right here where I'm standing. Middle of the day. And I have to ask myself, why? Why would her killer choose to dump her body where there's security everywhere, people all over, and it's so busy? Why would he do that? Why would he do that? This is not the place to dump a body if you're a serial killer during the middle of the day. It's just not.
I know that Gornberg had been shopping at the mall the day she was murdered. She also drove a black SUV. But beyond that, we found no similarities whatsoever.
So where does that leave us? more than one killer has stalked the Town Center Mall parking lot. Randy Gornberg? Her murder feels like an execution. Was she targeted? Who wanted her killed? And why? Right now, that remains a mystery. Then there's the killer of Nancy and Joey Bokicchio and the abductor of Jane Doe and her son.
What's wrong?
Get in the car.
Gotta be the same guy.
Both victims were driving SUVs, dark SUVs. Both victims had children with them. Both victims had been shopping at that mall. And both victims were tied up in a very similar manner. And more than that, a unique manner.
So the question is, which crime is the unusual one for this guy? The murder or the robbery? There's a key clue at the crime scene in the Bokicchio murder. The toy handcuffs that were used on Nancy, they had been broken. Did Nancy fight back?
She was streetwise. She might have been a lot younger than I was, but she was the streetwise one.
For Nancy's sister, Joanne, there's no doubt. Nancy came from the Bronx. She was born a fighter.
She was tough. You know, no one would mess with her.
Come on, hurry, another 200.
Hey, here.
She'd say to me, stand up, look strong. Never let them know you're afraid. But that's the kind of person she was. She took nothing from anyone.
I can't get any more out.
And when it came to protecting little Joey, Nancy wouldn't give an inch.
She fought, and I know that that was my sister. She loved Joey, and there was nothing more important in her life. I mean, to every mother, every breath, there's your children. But with my sister, it was beyond that. It was almost as like an obsession. She would never leave Joey.
But did that fighting spirit push her kidnapper too far? Was he always going to kill?
Could it have been as simple as, you know, Nancy began to fight back, you know? And how could you fault her for it? She's bound next to her daughter being driven around. I mean, it's got to be terrifying. I think it's likely that she began to resist. We know she did. There's a 911 phone call the minute she leaves.
What are you doing? Do you want to die? Help!
And I think it's more likely that he panicked and executed him. Doesn't excuse it, but I think that's more likely.
So is this a hardened killer who let someone get away? Or just a thief who panicked and killed his victims?
I believe his motive was robbery. You know, I don't believe that's in question. But why did he stop? Why is his action so inconsistent? We just don't know.
Me? I'm not so sure he's just a thief. To kill like he did, point blank, face to face, that takes a certain kind of coldness. This guy, to kill a 7-year-old, that tells me he's done it before. He'll do it again. Because someone just doesn't begin killing with 7-year-olds. Will he be caught? That's the key. And is he somewhere else? Is he roaming throughout this country doing the same thing?
He definitely went somewhere else, and I'll tell you what, his MO would be consistent with Boca. And the reason for that is because he got away with it. If he got away with it over here, why can't it work over there? That's what's in his mind. That's why a lot of serial killers, a lot of murderers, a lot of robbers, they'll continue with the same MO. Because guess what? They've gotten away with it. So why not try it again?
And we would look at affluent communities throughout the United States, right?
He's going to be focusing and looking at an affluent victim who is coming out and getting into a higher-end vehicle. That is somebody he knows probably has some money in their ATM.
I'm sure he's still chasing the money. That guy wanted it bad enough to kill. But the cops have spread the net far and wide on this one. looking for any other cases that match these. The zip ties, the goggles, the robbery. In this sketch, nothing has come up yet. Could he have changed tactics? Trying to keep one step ahead of the law? That's a scary thought. And it's the kind of thought that keeps these guys on the hunt.
We all carry pictures. I have pictures on my desk next to my own kids of Nancy and Joey. In the police academy, they tell you not to take this stuff personal. You can't go to a crime scene like that. You can't interact with this family for this long and not take it personal.
She made you this, Joey.
And it was a little handprint. And that was my Mother's Day present from her.
The Bocchicchio family, they are hurting. And the hurt hasn't let up.
When I got it, it was precious to me, but little did I know how precious it would become.
You know, we were planning so much. I mean, you just can't imagine. I still sometimes think maybe I'm in this bad dream that just not ending. You just don't. It's something you can't accept. Not something you'd ever, ever can imagine in your life.
This is you and Randy.
And Randy Gorenberg's mother, Idy Elias, she's a rock. And she's holding on for answers.
I don't want my daughter to be a cold case.
Who is Randy's killer? A second guy? A hitman? He's still out there, too.
Someone has to know something. Just let it out of your system. You'll feel better. You'll feel relieved. You won't have that guilt on you. Just tell somebody what you know. I promise you, and I know that you won't walk around with a heavy load anymore.
It could be a long wait, but if the moment comes, the cops here in Florida are ready for that call.
Somebody at some point is going to call us with the lead, with the one we want. We'll cross the finish line with it, but we need them to start us. We followed up on 2,000 leads so far. 2,001 is not going to be a problem.